Chapter 18, The Psychedelic Summer Camp, Summer 1962, Zihuatanejo, Mexico. The two goals of our psychedelic summer camp were to collect first-hand data in the form of observations, checklists, and written reports, and to experiment with methods of guiding group drug sessions. In particular, we wanted to test the setting theory. We were convinced that psychedelic drug effects were almost entirely determined by what people around the tripper did. If the environment radiated safety, beauty, wisdom, then even neurotic subjects would have experiences that were safe, aesthetic, and revelatory. The theory held that all bad trips could be converted to good trips if the environment was intelligently managed to provide support. I arrived in Zihuatanejo a week early to prepare the hotel staff. The daily summer camp schedule called for one-third of the company to be taking psychedelics, another third to be guiding the trippers, and the remaining third to be resting from their previous day's voyage, writing reports, and interviewing with the research team. We felt that we were involved in a fascinating historical event, probably the first research project in which experimentally induced mystical experiences were being woven into the fabric of daily work and play. We saw ourselves as pioneers developing for the industrial age modern versions of the traditional shamanic techniques for philosophic inquiry and personal growth. This first Zihuatanejo experiment was a roaring success. Hundreds of morning glory sessions, no problems beside a few moments of terror, easily talked back to clarity and calmed by the guides. We were diligently developing much more confidence in our abilities to guide ourselves and others in these awe-inspiring expeditions. We were redemonstrating that self-discovery could be pleasurable, that philosophy was fun, that science could be a pagan love of life. The revelation was very joyful. We were incubating the positive spirit of the 1960s. The Saturday night before our departure, we held a farewell party. Most of our group took LSD. Mariachis came up in the village, along with the mayor and some other officials. The hotel staff joined us to drink and dance. At midnight, we built bonfires on the beach and frolicked till dawn. Oh, gee, the next day we remembered, however, that we had agreed to play a Sunday baseball game with a team from the village. So at noon, we piled into the VW buses and drove down to the Diamond near the airport. Much to our surprise and to our horror, we discovered hundreds of fans assembled to watch the contest. It seemed that local papers up and down the coast had billed this as a game between Harvard University varsity and the official semi-pro state team. Farmers bust in from miles around. Taco, soft drinks, beer stands had been set up. And it was clear that some very serious peseta betting was taking place. I explained to the coach of the opposition that number one, we were amateurs, so number two, give us a substitute pitcher and a catcher. Number three, I did not tell him that some members of our squad were still hallucinating, including me. We had four good players, Dr. Alan Cohen, who later became a Mayor Baba follower and a member of Governor Ronald Reagan's anti-drug crusade. Dr. Cohen had once played American Legion ball. Even when hallucinating, he performed brilliantly. Lowell, the ex-dope dealer who later died in a Moroccan prison, sparkled at second base. Tommy Hitchcock roamed the outfield with a rangy grace. I played first, better than I did at West Point. Dick Alpert excelled as chief cheerleader. In the first inning, it so happened that the opposing pitcher walked our first three batters. Why? Well, maybe the fact that they stood with the bats on their shoulders staring at the pitcher with dilated eyeballs and otherworldly detachment, well, this may have contributed to his control problems. Plus, much of the crowd, considering us to be the home team, was on our side. Then Tommy Hitchcock hit a home run, and suddenly all of our hitters were slashing, singles, doubles, triples. You see, the acid distorted our perception of time. Everything moved slowly. When the ball left the pitcher's hand, it seemed to float towards the plate, allowing plenty of time to count the stitches, examine the Wilson label, speculate about the history of competitive sports since the Greek Olympics, feel your muscles contract reflexively to hit the ball. It's the busy, worrying mind, after all, that keeps us performing with animal grace. In their relaxed state, our hitters could swing the bat exactly the way it's supposed to be swung, effortlessly. Our pitcher, stimulated by the large cheering crowd and by the big lead, hurled his heart out. And when the ball came our way, we were equally impressive in the field. We had agreed to play for 7 innings. After 6, it became clear that we were really in trouble. See, the score was 8-0 in our favor, and the other team was getting surly. And the mood of the crowd was swinging back to support the local Mexican team. So I approached our pitcher and, glancing significantly at the crowd, I said in Spanish, listen, I think it would be very simpatico if you let them hit Manuel. He nodded. As an added precaution, I pulled out our best players, substituting 4 graduate students who were so unathletic they didn't know that the glove went on the non-throwing hand. Our pitcher fed the ball slowly. The opponents connected and ran the bases furiously. Meanwhile, our fielders ran around aimlessly. They threw the wrong base, they misjudged flies, and on several occasions actually threw their gloves in the ground for better to run after the ball. The crowd went wild when the village team, in a heroic comeback, tied the score. No one was in a mood for extra innings. We all cheered and embraced and drank beer and tequila, and the party spread throughout the town. Everyone in Zihuatanejo urged us to come back next year, and we planned to. The 6 weeks of summer school at Zihuatanejo had given us a small glimpse of utopia.